MO here is I want to talk about career in product marketing and competitive intel. And I can think of nobody better than you to talk about this with. And so I'm stoked to have you here.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here. And also just super impressed by what you're building in healthy competition. So it's my pleasure.
Let's go ahead and start from the top, because you know, you had a history of, you know, being a product marketer, doing all the product marketing things, and now you're kind of doing your own thing, which is helping other product marketers find their dream job and career and working for their kind of dream companies. And so I would love to hear just a little bit of background on kind of, you know, your time as a product marketer and then kind of what you're doing now as a almost like PMM coach.
For sure. Yeah. So I guess I can take just a little bit step back to, you know, give you a little bit more holistic view of my career. So I actually started off in a place that's completely different and alien to probably most people. I went to school for civil engineering. So both my bachelor's and my master's were civil engineering. And after school, I focused specifically on transportation engineering, which is basically helping like local jurisdictions with improving transportation systems, like how we improve transit and things like that. Very technical stuff, right? And after doing that for 6 years, I was like, you know, I'm not sure if this is what I want to do for life. And there was just like this like desire that was yearning, you know, to be fulfilled that I just wasn't there. I was like, I need to explore what this next thing is. So I went back to business school. And then in school, I realized I had a light bulb moment when I took marketing class. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I wanted to do. Because what was missing was really that creative side. I was really focused on analytical stuff, right? But there is a component that's missing, which is like the art to the art and the science. And I think that's so true for marketing, is you do need both in order to do really good marketing, right? Because it's understanding humans, understanding what humans want, and translating that into powerful, you know, stories, right? And everything that resonates with customers. And basically from there, I made pivot into marketing. I tried to basically get into any kind of tech marketing role. And that was a very big struggle because, of course, I have no background in that. So it's like a chicken and egg problem. And so after getting rejected left and right from pretty much every place I've applied, I figured out, wait a minute, I'm not really playing to my strengths. I need to show people I can do this, figure out where my competitive advantage is. And talking about competitive advantage, right? And then that allowed me to land an interview at Autodesk and then basically get my first role as a content marketing manager in Autodesk. When I started working there, I realized while I like my role, I was quite far from product and that technical aspect was a little bit missing. So I started to shadow product managers, talk to a lot of product marketers, and within 6 months, I was able to land a product marketing role at a startup where I basically loved the job. And since then, I worked at three different startups where I've basically built the team from ground up 2 times. So the second and third startup, basically, I was a lead product marketer and created the function from scratch where I started building teams and then leading them to success. So that's sort of been my journey in product marketing. And interestingly, during COVID, I had friends who were unfortunately laid off, you know, in that first wave of layoffs. And I just said, you know, I'm happy to help if anybody is interested. So started helping out some friends getting jobs, get back in the job market. And they all got jobs and they were like, Elian, this seems to be something you're really good at. Have you considered doing this more, you know, sort of more formally? And I was like, actually, I really enjoy doing this and I seem to have a knack for it and have been doing it ever since. Started doing it as a side hustle almost 2.5 years ago. And earlier this year, I left my full-time job to focus solely on coaching and advising. And basically, my key focus right now as a coach is really threefold. Number one, helping people get jobs, which is really the primary thing people come to me for. Number two is to help people, especially new product marketers, succeed in the first 2 years of their career as a product marketer. And the last one is helping experienced PMM seek more leadership positions. And specifically, I focus a lot of that on helping women and women of color into those leadership positions. That is a long story, but hopefully that gives people some idea about my background.
The one thing that's interesting for me is that, you know, especially over the past few years, like during COVID, right? We saw this huge influx of people getting hired. Like there's tons of job opportunities out there. Now it's a little bit of a different situation, right? There aren't as many opportunities It's a bit more of like an employer's market. And so it's just more challenging to find work, and people are getting laid off a lot. And so it's definitely a more, I would say, pessimistic kind of job market right now. And so I would love to just kind of understand, like, what are some just overall the state of product marketing jobs and like patterns and trends that you're seeing? Like, what are some things that are top of mind for you and that you're hearing from the folks that are in your community?
Yeah, so definitely what you're saying is 100% true. We have basically a big bump, right, during like that COVID bump, and then the reversal of that bump, which is like in the big dip period right now. And as probably most of you know, right, earlier in Q1 this year, we had like the largest layoffs ever, like in the past 10 years, likely, right? But there's like 160 something people who are laid off, 60,000 people who are laid off in that time period. I will say the good news is that the layoffs are slowing down. I did see something that was said earlier that right now it's the lowest it's been this year, right? So there is a tapering off of the layoff effect, which is something to be sort of hopeful for. And especially as we're going out of this like summer season, employment should look better coming like fall. Usually it's always much lower in the summertime because people are out, and it's not the best hiring season. So having said that though, right, it's still highly competitive. I will say for someone who is, let's say somebody who has a couple of year experience as a product marketer last year, it's very likely you have absolutely no problem getting offers and even multiple offers, right? But now you would be like, it's challenging to even get one offer because there's like 5 to 10 times more competition for a single role. So the biggest challenge people come to me for is, I like somebody was like, oh, I have a lot of experience, right? I basically have been going through the interview process and have reached the final round a couple of times, but every time I lose out to somebody else, right? What can I do differently? But that is a consistent theme that I see with experienced candidates, right? That, and in terms of like people who are not experienced candidates or who people who are trying to career switch, that's like an even bigger battle, right? Because there's already hard for people who are trying to who are experienced, right? So for the ones who are not, it's sort of like, how do you do that? And so in order to overcome those challenges, I have also different ways of helping people to job search that is more applicable to today's times versus what was happening 1 year ago.
What are some of those like kind of tactics that you help people? Because that's there's a couple of other things that I've noticed too that I'm curious if it's changed, like specifically like comp packages. Because I know that again last year I was seeing comp packages like skyrocketing. There was such a demand for employees at the time, and now of course, like we just mentioned, it's kind of like the employer's market. But
Exactly.
also where there's like this huge, issue with inflation that's happening right now, where we can't just accept really low comp packages. And so that's another piece where I'm curious about. And I'm not sure if you have specific insight into that with like some of your clients, but would love to kind of see things like if you
For
have a
sure.
perspective on that.
Yeah, so I can totally address the comp question. Let me start with talking about some of the approaches that I have clients take and which has been working quite well. So, a couple of things. Number one is really about targeting. The way I like to tell people is think of your entire job search process as doing product marketing for yourself, right? Like you're the product. You're trying to market yourself. And the first thing to figure out is who are you targeting, right? What kind of companies are you most suited for? The biggest mistake really is trying to target everybody, right? You're like, oh, there's not many jobs, so let me just go and apply to as many jobs as possible because surely that would improve my chances, right? That's actually not true, right? As we all know, if you're trying to target everybody, you're targeting nobody, right? In marketing. So you want to go narrower to focus on companies where you could be the top one or two best candidates for hire, right? So go after industries where you do have a competitive advantage, where you have experience with that customer, the target customers, with the product, or something else, right? Even with the business model, where it could be an advantage for you. So one of my clients who just got at a job last week, he was basically applying to 100 jobs before, right? And it was having no luck. And after we started working together, we applied to 5 jobs. And because prior he was in Web3 crypto kind of stuff, right? But obviously that whole thing collapsed. But we're like, wait a minute, we could leverage experience just for general fintech, right? And for developer-focused companies, because he was working on like a super technical tool. So we focused on 5 companies that were similar in size, that were focusing on these different industry verticals. And then we applied different referral techniques where he was able to connect with third degree connections to get a portfolio into the role, right? And that allowed him to get interviews. And once you're interview and you have that strong targeting, you can create a super targeted and sharp story for yourself, right? Which is your positioning, right? Your own positioning as a candidate. And that positioning would be highly differentiated from anybody else out there. That's going to allow you to stand out and position yourself as the best candidate. And so I think it's first strong targeting and then strong positioning. And then everything else after that process is just about getting 5 to 10% better through the interview process by applying structured frameworks and selecting the most relevant examples to share during the interview process. And specifically just on the interview part, if I were to double click, one challenge I see a lot of people go through is sort of like either going super long on their answers. It's like just laundry list, like here's my entire experience, right? Or not giving enough detail and just say, this is what I did done, right? What I tell people is to follow a modified STAR framework, which I call process, situation, action, and results framework. Basically, you want to start with what is your general framework for solving similar types of problems? Tell them a specific situation you've done it. What is a specific action you took in distinct steps? And then what is the actual result you achieved, right, for the company? And when you follow that framework, your answer will just become a lot more clear to people and also show your systems level of thinking as a candidate, right? It's instead of rambling on, you're like, oh, actually, here's how I do product launches. And this is exactly how I did it. So that would be my advice in terms of some tips you can apply as an experienced candidate.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned that referral piece because I see this all the time on LinkedIn where you'll see a job or some kind of a role that's open, and then you see the number of people that have applied, which I don't know if there's like a more just a way to like uninspire me, from like apply, because you'll see, oh, this role at this like fast growing company, over 1,000 candidates was posted yesterday or something like that.
Right.
It's terrible. And so I feel like that's so important just to keep in mind that how important referrals are for these types of
100%.
situations. I'm curious, like your referral tactic or like connecting with different people. That are even third degree connections. You might not be, super tight with these people. Like how can you reach out to them and get a referral or an in to at least get that interview?
Great question. So here's my process for getting referrals. So let's say you have a job, right? You're like, oh, I'm a super great fit for this job, but I don't know anybody at the company. So let me just figure out. So what do you do, right, at this point? The first thing you want to do is, which I believe is the most effective, is try to find a hiring manager, because ultimately the hiring manager is the person with the decision-making power, and they're the most likely to actually talk to you, right, and get back to you. And if they like you, they'll immediately put you in for an interview. So I would find the hiring manager. And I would write them a very value-focused message to say, hi, I saw this job opening, and I see these are the requirements from the JD, and I believe I'm really uniquely qualified, and here's why. Literally answer their question, right? Like in the JD of how I'm best qualified. Attach your resume and your cover letter and say, I love 15 minutes to chat with you, right? And see what happens. Generally, you don't hear a lot from hiring managers replying back to you. They don't, but even if they don't reply, it doesn't mean they didn't see it. They will, if they see it, they might very likely just pass your resume on to the recruiting team and you will get an interview invite. I see this happen over and over again. So that would be like the first thing, right? Let's say you wait a couple of days, hearing nothing, didn't see anything happen, right? That's fine. The second thing I would do after that is to find other people within the company who are potentially your peers, right? And go after them. So this could be other product marketers in the company. It could be a product manager. It could be a customer success marketer. It could be manager, it could be a demand gen marketer. And you want to go after people who have a pretty good online presence, whose background you resonate with, right? You may have something in common with them. And really, like, you want to understand them as a human. And I would do the same, send out a value focused message. And at this point, you're not really asking for a interview referral. You're not like, hey, can you refer me, right? Like that. Nobody wants to just like help you if you give them nothing. Again, lead with value. Say something interesting about their profile. It's like, hey, looks like we went to the same college, right? Go Gators. I saw that you made a pivot into this company from so and so. That's so impressive because I did similar pivot myself. I'm really interested in this position in your company. I have this background, which I think should be a great fit. And would you have 15 minutes to chat? Here's my calendar link. right? Make it super easy for them to book a meeting. You have a chat with them. And then if you have a great chat, it's going really well. At the end of the call, just say, this sounds like a great opportunity. I would love the opportunity to work here. Would you mind putting a referral in for me? The likelihood you're going to get a referral is like 90%, right? At that point, because you already spoke with them. So essentially, that's the second thing you can do, right? If the first hiring manager doesn't work out. And then the last thing would be, you can also just put out feelers out there, right? Just to say, hey, tap into your friends' network, your second, third degree connections, and also ask them, do you know these are the type of companies I'm actually looking for, right? And these are my skill sets. Do you know anybody, right, who would work there, right? You can do any one of the following things, refer me to somebody, right? Share my profile with them, or just share my information with the network wide, right? So, a lot of times when people are laid off, I do encourage them to post online to share with their network, like this happened. People are willing to help you out, right? Because obviously it's not fun to be laid off and they want to help you. And that's a great point to leverage them to help you
Absolutely.
and make the ask super clear, right? Because I see a lot of people posting those things just like, I would love your help. I'm like, that's great, but like, how can I help you? Who are you, right? And just make it super clear, I need this type of roles for these people. And to your point, so the client who did end up getting that role, it was some similar thing where he put some messages out in his network, and then he had to speak to three people. He got referred to one person, that person referred him to somebody else, and he got referred a third time, right? And made it in. So I think persistence and patience pays off. And I think if you use the combination of these three methods, you're going to be able to get some good interviews.
That's a great point. And I have experience reaching out to people that I have no business knowing using that same tactic. So this is back when I was still working in Michigan in sales. I had no marketing experience, but I had a marketing degree and I was desperately trying to figure out, okay, how can I get into some kind of like marketing role? I wanted to move. And there's a company called Crunchyroll, and it's pretty much like you stream anime. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I totally love the product, really want to see. And there was like a marketing role that was open. And I looked on LinkedIn and I found what I thought was the hiring manager. And so I looked at his profile and I saw that he was also from the Midwest. And he had clearly moved over to like the Bay Area and got this job. And so I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'm going to lean in on that. Maybe he'll like find some like sympathy for me as just like a fellow Midwesterner. Trying to get out to like the West Coast, and it actually worked. Like, I just kind of cold messaged him, and I was like, "Hey, out here trying to find like a marketing role. Obviously, the Midwest isn't the best place to find these roles. Would love to talk with you about like just to connect, essentially. Like, tried to like get that kind of like common ground." And he was like, "Oh yeah, like I totally hear you. Like, here's my number." And we ended up talking. It ended up like the role that I looked at, I was not qualified for, but people are more open to helping you out than you think.
Absolutely. Yeah, well said. And I think I'm sure your sales skills came into play as well, doing outreach.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, there's a reason why I only spent like a year and a half in sales. I wasn't that great at it.
This episode of the Healthy Competition Podcast is brought to you by the Healthy Competition Community. Whoa, can you believe that? The Healthy Competition Community is where product marketers, competitive intel practitioners, and other go-to-market pros share best practices and act as a sounding board for questions that Google can't answer. Over 1,000 messages are exchanged every month, despite there being less than 100 members in the community. Now, I'm a firm believer in prioritizing high-quality topics of conversation and building authentic connections over member count numbers. So this piece is super important to me. But with that being said, if you listen to this podcast, then you'll probably love being in the community. So join today at healthycompetition.co. That's healthycompetition.co. Now, back to the episode.
Anyway, I think moving on from that, like let's actually talk about career pivoting, because I think that that's also super important right now. Because again, I think that the job market a couple of years ago like probably was a bit more forgiving for people that wanted to pivot into product marketing or into something else. Like, how would you guide people that are trying to pivot today? Would you even recommend it, or would you try to say like, hey, maybe just like wait it out a little bit longer while you still have a job? Or what's your recommendation there?
Great question. So I've written extensively and have lots of to talk about here specifically. So the short answer is yes. Like, I never think you should just say, don't do that or whatever, right? I always believe in people going after their dreams. And Oh, but the challenge here, right, is it's yes, but, right? It's like, yes, you can do it, but you do require a different technique to doing it in today's market. The first thing when I work with somebody who is a career pivoter is trying to understand how what is their skill set and how do they measure up to product marketing skills. If their skill set generally match that of a product marketer and they have a ton of transferable experience, then they're basically in the job search ready mode, right? And we apply a lot of the similar techniques to like the experience hire process, targeting the right companies, right? Selecting like the reframing their experiences so they're like, focused on the right roles, et cetera. So that's, I wouldn't say there's anything super different about that. However, right, I will say most people do have certain skill gaps when you do that evaluation. And generally, the skill gaps, like soft skills, there's no problem. All of those are transferable, right? But when I'm talking about skill gaps, it's sort of like the four fundamental areas of product marketing that needs to be filled. So number one, any type of research skills, whether it's competitive research, market research, or customer research. It's actually quite surprising. Even existing product marketers, a lot of them have never done research. Like they're only doing outbound product marketing, right? So like if you want to be a full stack marketer, that's really important. The second part is positioning and messaging. That is usually the one that's lacking a lot from people who are doing career switches because it's just like hard skill to get, right? If you're not a product marketer, unless you were a consultant before, right? Which would be like a little bit different. Third thing would be go-to-market launches. So, again, if you're not a product marketer, it's really hard to have actual launch experience. And then the last one is enablement. So, like sales enablement, customer success team enablement, providing collaterals training. So, it's like if you have two to three out of those four, you are still pretty okay because we can try to find you roles where those skills you do have are what's most important for the role, right? For instance, some PMM roles, they're like, we need somebody who's really great at content. Like I need this person to focus mostly on sales, right? So somebody who has been an AE before would be great fit for that role, right? That happened. But if you have only one or two out of the four, it's really, really challenging. In which case I would tell you to upskill, right? The way to upskill is generally I recommend is to really focus on building practical experience as much as you can so that you can show people what you can do instead of just like, I have learned that, right? Like you can't show people what you can do. So volunteering projects, doing freelancing work, right? So you can build that part of your portfolio up to show that you can do it. And I think a shameless plug, you probably know this, is that I do have a sort of cohort program that I just launched yesterday, which is sort of solving that exact chicken and egg problem, right? Where we're pairing people up with companies so that you can actually do a project live while getting feedback on how you're doing it. So it's basically providing you the portfolio at the end and also theory. So that's, I would say, sort of like the multiple different ways I would go about it depending on your profile as a career switcher.
So you, cohort members will join and then do a project for another company to, and then they'll get like feedback on kind of how it went, or walk me through how that, how like the
So,
process.
yeah, it's basically a 7-week program where you join the program, and then part of the curriculum is to teaching you fundamentals of product marketing. So it's still focused on learning, right? Like we'll teach you, like say, reading research, and then right after teaching you, you're going to be paired up with an actual company, and you're going to implement that immediately for the company, right? So the company be like, okay, great, now go develop a persona, right? With using what you just learned. And then you have to build that, and then you get feedback on your project. And then at the end, you will create an entire portfolio of work you've done, which includes, things like personas, positioning and messaging, even a go-to-market plan and all of that for a specific actual company, right? And that you can use to either move forward, use it as a practical experience you have gained to apply to new jobs, or potentially even get hired by that company because you did such a great job, right? So that's what the program is all about.
I love that. That's so different from what I've seen from other cohort courses. That's really cool. Okay. Now, and this is actually a great segue into talking about like just your personal business. But before we do that, I want to go back and talk about the comp piece, because what I've found with all these conversations, people love talking about money. And so it's either like I have to drill into this. And so walk me
Absolutely.
through like the comp piece, like especially too, just again, because I think with this job market, people are afraid to, I think, ask for what they're worth. I especially don't think that people are wanting to turn, you know, potential employers off if they're asking for too much. And so there's this kind of dichotomy where, you know, if you want to ask for more money, but like the job market might not allow for it. So how do you recommend those conversations with your clients? Yeah.
If it's a really good company and you do want to work for them and you've, you know, gone through the entire interview process, figure out they're a great fit, right? Like they have good faith, you have good faith, a great culture and everything, then I absolutely think you want to go into negotiations. I do say like if everything works out, right? Because if a company is trying to lowball you in the beginning, like being like way below, you know, market salary and everything, I would, you know, obviously I would jump on the call with them in the, for the recruiter screening, but I would be like, this is what I need, right? To make it work. Otherwise I wouldn't proceed because people who lowball you and don't respect your time, they don't see your value, right? You're just not going to have a great time there anyways. So let's say you do go through the entire process at the end and you have this you reach the point where you need to discuss comp. The first thing kind of going into the negotiations is really to understand the value you're delivering for them, right? So I think it, essentially when you're getting hired, right, is a value exchange. Like you're getting paid to do a service for them, right? So you're going to be compensated for the value you bring. So in order to negotiate well, you want to remind people the value you bring to the table and also the cost of not bringing you. So when I tell people is when you're going into those calls and the conversation, the first thing is to reiterate the value you're bringing, you know, thanks so much, right, for bringing me, for sort of offering me this, super excited about this opportunity. And based on what you've said throughout the interview process, I believe I can add tremendous value in XYZ areas, right? And I'll be best positioned to do so and hit the ground running because of my background in XYZ, right? Because sometimes people need to just hear like, oh yeah, that's why I offered you this, you know, this, give you this offer, right? That's amazing. And then second thing, once you do that is make an ask like, okay, based on that, this is the amount I believe is will be really something that I'll be more happy with, right, in terms of the comp. And then you can give some reasons for why that number is important for you. Number one, benchmarking data. You can say, right, like benchmarking could be like sources you found through Glassdoor.
Or I was about to say, is Glassdoor or like what are the best kind of benchmarks today? Because yeah, historically, like I've used Glassdoor in the past, but I'm not sure if that's if that's still relevant. So what are the sources that you think?
The best benchmark is tell people these are what the other companies are offering you, right?
Yeah. So you'd always recommend trying to get multiple offers then? That's kind of the best tactic? Yeah, well,
not even multiple offers, even just people you're interviewing with, right? Like they don't know how many companies you're interviewing with, right? And that shouldn't make a huge difference. What you're saying is that I'm currently in an active interview with these companies and this is the average I've been quoted, right? If you're interviewing with this company, they're quoting this much, right? It mean, right? You deserve that much. So that's like a really good benchmark. And then generally for the other ones, like Glassdoor is more for your personal use. I don't tell people to cite them to say, I looked at Glassdoor, right? Because you know, that's just not very convincing. But I think saying that I have been offered these amounts in the other interviews I've been having and also looking through, you know, just understanding the industry averages from reputable sources, right? And based on my experience level and the value I'm bringing, I would love to be able for you to meet me here, right? This is the amount I would want. And then just kind of see what their reaction is, right? Last thing I would say is once you have made that statement, I would also say, give them assurance that if they do meet you, that you would take the offer, right? Mm-hmm. Because what happens even from a hiring manager perspective, which is the other perspective, is that I'm totally happy to negotiate with people. And I think it's important too, right? But I don't want you to just play ball with me, just like play me around. Like I give you this and come back to me again and I negotiate, right? Like I think it's important to show good faith and you're much more likely to get it if you say, I will take the offer. Like if you meet this criteria, right? So I think that's just in terms of salary. And the other part of this is also other things that are not salary to negotiate. So for instance, negotiating a sign-on bonus is also helpful. Sign-on bonus, I don't know if you have been a hiring manager before, sign-on bonus generally comes from a different pot of money. It's not subject to the salary band. So usually, it's a discretionary bucket of money that comes from a different part of the budget. So usually the hiring manager, if they have some leftover money in their budget, they can just give it to you, like right there without approval, which is why you always want to ask for sign-on bonus. Right? You can say, after you negotiate the salary, let's say they can't meet you where you are. You can say, okay, well, thank you for trying. Would you be open to a sign-on bonus of this amount? Right? That would really help me tide over to the new role and help me get started, right? And, you know, in the best way possible. Right? So that's something you can negotiate. And then other point you can leverage is also, of course, changing, checking the other sort of benefits like 401k matching, right? Like you can, you want to see if they match. If not, then you can also use it as part of your leverage, right? To say, you know, compare benefits, right? You don't have these kind of benefits, which I've had before in my previous opportunities and also in other companies I'm talking to, right? Which is another reason I would ask for more salary.
Those are all fantastic points. I didn't know that piece about the sign-on bonus. Sam asked a great question in the chat. How might someone advocate to be paid based on skills and value, not geolocation? Given the market, I'm nervous I'll get lowballed for where I live.
Is it Sam who asked the question? Like, have you
asked Sam? Yeah. Sam, is that something that you've experienced? Or, and feel free to come off mute if you want, but maybe some like more details so that Elin can answer more.
Yeah. I live in Buffalo, New York, which is definitely not considered a tech hub by any means. And what I'm seeing a lot now is based on the market and even companies, when you're still an employee, they're leveling salaries based on where you live. So obviously, if you're in New York City or San Francisco, you get the premium. But for those of us outside of these tier one and even some of the tier two cities, like I guess Chicago or DC might be considered quote unquote more tier two. How are we then able to not let them come and be like, oh, well, when you're in this region, we'll pay you XYZ. Meanwhile, you know, you command the same premium as somebody in San Francisco.
So for those situations where they do have salary attached to a particular region for their company's policy, it is really hard to sort of counter that essentially, right? You don't necessarily have to tell people exactly which city you're located in. Like on your resume, even you can just say New York. And then also when you're giving your salary range, just give them the range that you want, right? The high end. And if they can meet you, they can meet you. If they can't, they just forget that, right? And then if they're like, oh, you're not located in this particular, you're not in the high region, so we can't give you that much. And you can say, well, I bring the same value as somebody who is located in this high region, right? So I think that that could be some tips that I have. But to be honest, like I have not encountered this with my clients specifically.
I think it's also important. It's one of those things where like, you say with like remote work, you know, like sometimes people are open to it. Sometimes they're just straight up not. Like I know plenty of companies, they're doing like this whole return to work or return not to work to the office kind of mandate. And this is like a company-wide thing. And you have to have special permission to work remotely. It's kind of similar to these salary bands where you might be able to pull some strings if you are like the ideal candidate, like you are the exact person that this company is looking for, then, you know, you hear it all the time that companies are going to try to do whatever they can to get you. But it, I think that the remote work piece and the salary bands, when they're like company mandated and not just like really a department specific thing that like the hiring manager can kind of just decide, then it just, it does get more challenging to negotiate that piece.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, to be honest with you, like if you are based in Buffalo and you're applying for a role that's like open to people from all over the country and whatever, put it bluntly, one of your advantages is that they can probably hire you for cheaper. Like that's just a reality, right? Like if they have somebody like you, who's like, they have somebody like you based in Buffalo and they have somebody who is literally in downtown Manhattan, right? With the same skill set and you're both equally qualified candidates and it's going to cost them 10, 15K less, they're most likely going to hire you, right? So I totally understand the sort of concern for salary and all that and want an equal playing field. But in sort of a remote world, I think that is sort of the reality we're dealing in.
Good points. Okay. So now I wanted to, we talked about like the comp piece. The next thing that I wanted to talk, and I know we have like 5 minutes, so I want to talk like one more thing. And then I want to do some plugs for you and all of your stuff, Elin. But the last piece that I wanted to ask about was just like building out your business. You kind of mentioned it yourself, how you have to think like a product marketer when you are like advertising yourself as a candidate. I'm sure you had to do the same thing when you were building out your side business. And so walk me through like, you know, the first year of you putting together your business, like what were some of the challenges that you faced? How did you overcome them? What are some ways that you PMM'd your way into starting your own business?
For sure. So I will say it's kind of weird because it's my first year right now doing my business full time. And then I've always been like building a side hustle. I think regardless of whether it's side hustle or full time or anything, the biggest challenge is just figuring out your niche, right? Because funnily, when I first started doing this, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to coach everybody under the sun. Like, like I'm so great, you know, like I should, everybody would want to work with me. I actually started first getting people in product management because I was part of a product manage group. And I was like trying to recruit for people in that group, you know, to do free calls with me. And then once I was like, oh, they would like my, what I'm talking to them about, right? And then they would sign up for paid services. And I did manage to get a couple of clients there that way. Just quickly realized product management is not for me. I don't enjoy coaching people on product management. I'm not like the most amazing expert on product management, right? And so it was just like, okay, that's not a fit clearly. And then it basically was just pivoting very quickly and then figuring out where is my niche? Where am I getting like traction? But I think the most important thing, and I think the most valuable lesson I've learned is always to experiment and try, right? So that's a product marketing mindset. It's also just a growth marketing and just in general, growing a business mindset. It's always test and learn, right? Like, because whatever assumptions you can make could be completely wrong unless you test it, right? So similarly, I also said, "Who I should target a bunch of mom groups because I'm a mom. Like, what if I just got a whole bunch of moms to work with me, right?" So I made ads, I did paid ads, right? Like in mom groups in my neighborhood and everything. And I had one mom client who was great, but like everything else was completely nothing. It was like crickets, not getting any feedback. And I realized because there's so many already great mom coaches out there, right? And they had already fully built out programs. Their entire focus was just on moms. I was like, well, that's not my full focus. Just having a two-year-old does not make me an expert at being a mom coach, you know? Right. So then it's like figuring out what is my competitive advantage. And I think that helped me understand, number one, it's that I'm a product marketer. I have learned the hard way of how to do product marketing practically. And I've been doing product marketing across different types of companies, right? B2B, B2C, PLG, right? And different sizes, right? Like Series A, Series C, and Series E and public companies. And that combination gives me a huge amount of insight into how to do product marketing. And then second one is just job search, because I'm a career switcher myself. And that's, I'm very good at helping people with storytelling, do storytelling. Like, how do they position themselves? Like, I can help people do product marketing, right? That kind of thing. And I just apply to job search. And just narrowing that down allowed me to kind of see more traction immediately and seeing results from there. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that answered your question. Kind of went around a little bit.
Yeah, no. You added a lot there. And I can speak, you know, personally for like side stuff, like what you said about just experimenting, that resonates with me the most. Like, I'm always trying to think of like different ways of getting the word out about this podcast, the community, different types of growth channels. I mean, I'm only one person and there's a limited amount of time. And so you have to be super diligent about where you're spending time. You know, not every single channel is going to work for everyone. You know, you mentioned like posting like in like mom groups. For me, like that thing was like TikTok initially. Like I got to a point where I was posting very frequently. I got a decent amount of followers, but I realized it wasn't really converting into anything meaningful. And so I've kind of pivoted. Now I'm trying Twitter. And so, you know, we'll see how that goes. I'll give it a few months. But in either case, that's kind of like how I try to think of it too. But Elin, this has been fantastic. I know you have to jump in a couple of minutes. I don't want to skimp on sharing like the stuff that you're doing. And so why don't you share where people can follow you if they want to learn more about your services, and also where they can find that cohort if they're interested in learning more there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the best thing is follow me on LinkedIn and also check me out on my website. If I can post in chat, that's just my website right there. All the services I do offer. I'm also happy to just chat with anybody who is going through any challenges in their job search, looking to upskill as a product marketer. Just totally happy to just sit down with you and see how I can help.
Love it. And for those that are just listening and aren't in the session right now, the website is techgrowthcoach.com. So if you want to learn more about Elin, you can do so there. Elin, this was wonderful. Thank you so much. I'll get this posted on the podcast feed here soon. Thanks again so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Hey, you made it to the end of the episode. I have one small favor for you now. If you could please rate this podcast 5 stars wherever you're listening to it, that'd be super helpful for me. For Spotify, you can only leave a review on the mobile app, and you can do that on the top of the Healthy Competition podcast profile. And for Apple Podcasts, you have to scroll to the bottom of the show's page and click write a review. Each podcast episode takes about 5 hours of my time from beginning to end. While reviewing it, should only take about 5 seconds of your time. Plus, you'd be making my day. So thank you so much in advance, and see you in the next episode.